When Jesus was upon this earth, he came to the earth for a purpose. And that purpose was to give his life as a ransom for many. In Luke, the 19th chapter, verse number 10, we are told that he came to seek and save that which was lost. During his 33 years of sojourning here upon this earth, he prepared the disciples for the great work that they would carry on after his departure in spreading the gospel throughout the known world. After his resurrection, he appeared to them for some 40 days. Following those 40 days, he readied himself to go back and ascend to his Father. And as he gathered them together for the last time to give his last instruction, we have them found in Matthew, the 28th chapter, in verse number 18, as he told them that he had all authority in heaven and earth. And his last charge to them is in verse 19. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit. We studied this morning that God is no respecter of persons. God desires that all men come to the knowledge of the truth. God desires that all men would seek an opportunity to know Him in order that they might have a relationship with Him, that they might be saved. While I was in the military for over 20 years, I was in foreign countries. But never did I have the opportunity to be able to share the gospel with those that were in those foreign countries. At the time that I was there, there was no known church at that time. Me being a very young man and very weak in the faith, I might add. And if I had it to do over again, I should have done what the early disciples did. They went everywhere preaching the word. But in years that have gone by, there have been churches established in many places all over the world. In the year 2000, Brother Randy Blackaby introduced me to foreign work. He asked me for over a year to go with him to Lithuania, to a country that the Iron Curtain had opened a door and now it had fallen, and now the gospel was being able to take into a land that had never been able to even know anything about God or His Word. And that opened up a new horizon for me. At the very same time, Brother Ron Halbrook, for many years, tried to convince me to go with him to the Philippine Islands. And in 2002, he finally convinced me to go. And following that trip, I have been greatly blessed and I have been greatly committed to the work that is done in that part of the world because of the door of opportunity that has been opened there. I believe if things continue as they are right now, and the gospel continues to be open, in the next 10 years, there will be more Christians in the Philippines than there will be in the United States. That is not the way that it should be, but that is the way that is going because of the open hearts and the willingness that those in a country that we would call a third world, a country where there is poverty, where 70% of the nation lives below the poverty level. Now, we're not talking about the poverty level as we understand it. Our understanding of the poverty level is not the same as the poverty level in the Philippines. The average Filipino lives on less than $200 a month. Some of them, not even $1,000 a year. We do not understand the type of poverty that is very apparent everywhere you go in the Philippine Islands. But their poverty has done something for them that our prosperity has done the opposite for us. It has made them more willing, more desirous, and more willing to examine spiritual things. For they know that their life will not get any better. They have no grander ideal that in time that their life will become anything more than what it already is. You know, we talk about existing from day to day. They don't talk about it, they do it. It's something that has touched my heart in every trip that I've made to the Philippines to see their willingness to endure so many afflictions. And yet they are some of the happiest people that I have ever met. And so beginning in 2002, I made my first trip. In November and December of last year, I made my fourth. And Lord willing, if everything goes as planned, I will make my fifth in April. This trip in November and December was to fill in for a preacher who was due to some health problems, was not able to go, and that's why I went in November and December. The trip I will take this April, I made plans 2 years ago. I've tried to tell the elders here, and that not only for them, but for me, I have no desire to go every year. It's too hard a trip. It's too much in time to prepare, and it's not fair to the local work. But they have been gracious enough since the year of 2002 to allow me to go every other year, and they allowed me to go to fill in this trip that I'm going to report on tonight. And I want to share with you the things that we did while we were there for 3 weeks. The gospel light has gone into the Philippines. God kept His promise to send the light. We sang a song many times in our book, Send the Light. God's desire is that we send His light, that we send it wherever we have time and opportunity. The light servant is Jesus Christ. He was the one that came, and He was the one that prepared the way. He was the one that gave His life, that made it possible that men could have spiritual life after this life was over. The right time was the gospel age. The Christian age opened a new opportunity. The Christian age became a universal age. It was an age where the universal gospel was to be taken to all men. It was no longer a nation. It was no longer a group selected people. It was a universal gospel to all that would listen and to all who would be willing to obey. Acts 10, verse 34 and 35. It was the right message. The right message as preached is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the right people, all who are willing to listen. And it's the right reaction. People rejoice when they obey. For many years while in this country, I read with great encouragement and very perplexing to me at the same time, at the time in the 1800s in our own country, when there were people being converted by the thousands, where they would have protracted meetings, where they would hold them for 3 weeks, and there would be such an outpouring in that meeting that they would extend the meeting for 3 weeks. Can you imagine that happening today? Could you see the church putting up with a 3-week protracted meeting and then extending it for another 3 weeks? But there was a time in our country when the desire was high and when the willingness was high to examine and look at spiritual things. Today we do well to have a weekend meeting. Today we are shortening our meetings. When I was growing up in the 70s, our meetings were 10 days long. We had services in the morning and the evening. And they were attended in the morning as well as in the evening. Some people came to both services. The churches in the area, they attended them, and the house was packed every night. Ladies and gentlemen, those days are over. And they are not over because meetings do not work anymore. They are over because men have found other things to do with their time. And their priority has shifted away from spiritual matters, away from spiritual life, and has been immersed into physical life. But that is not the case in the Philippine Islands. In the Philippine Islands, it is just the opposite. They have a hungering, they have a desire. And they come, if you will come, they will come and listen. And that's why I am encouraged to go, and that's why I will continue to go as long as the Lord allows me to and blesses me and gives me health and the ability to be able and good brethren support me to go and to preach the gospel to the Christians that are in the Philippines and those who are not Christians. And so on November the 26th of this year, I left at about 11 o'clock in the afternoon, and 23 hours later, I landed in Manila at 11 o'clock at night on November the 27th on Tuesday night. After we got through customs, we got to a hotel about midnight, and we got up the next day early in the morning. We had breakfast, and we went to our first preaching assignment. This trip was 22 days long. Myself, Ron Halbrook, and David Halbrook were the 3 people that accompanied this trip. During the time, we taught 120 lessons. Those were lessons that we had in lectureships or in churches where we attended, and that's not counting private Bible studies that we had with people at the hotel, things that we had in traveling when we were in our van or when we were in a ferry, an all-night ferry, going to the next place to preach. We had opportunity to study the Bible. Most of the classes that we had during this trip was directed for gospel preachers. We had one period that I'll talk about that we had a preaching seminar to edify and to build up the preachers that are in that area. Ladies and gentlemen, in the Philippine Islands there are 750 churches. They are covered over a span of 16 islands. And they are growing every day. There are more churches established every day in the Philippines. These churches that are established have young converts as preachers. Preachers have come out of denominationalism. What do they need? They need to be taught. They need to be grounded. They need to be edified. They need to be taught the truth. And they need to be able to see why, what they came out of and why they came out of it and what they need to do in order to change it. During this trip, we had 17 baptisms. Now, if you remember in times past, we've had trips that we baptized over 100. But you must remember, at this trip, our focus was not the alien sinner. Every one of these baptisms had with people that sit in on our classes. Three of these baptisms were denominational preachers who came to our seminars, and after a period of 3 or 4 days, they determined that they were preaching the wrong gospel, and they desired to be baptized. In all my life in preaching in the United States, I have never had the opportunity of ever converting a preacher of another faith to the truth. I've been able to see it done and be able to be part of it many, many times in the 4 trips that I've made to the Philippines. It definitely has an effect upon what I've always understood. And what I have always understood, that the power to convert the soul is in the message of the cross. And if there is an honest heart, and there are people that are willing to listen, the gospel will do the rest. And all we can do is plant seed. And I think sometimes that we have lost our confidence in the message of the cross. We do not have to be ashamed of who we are, what we represent, and what we believe. All we are trying to do is God's will. All we are trying to do is show people what the Bible story is and allow them to make the decision for themselves. That's what I do when I go to the Philippines. I just have a different result. And I believe that's true because the heart of the Filipino people are much different than the heart of the people in this country. The first place that we went on November 29th and 30th, we went to Dumaguete City in Negros Oriental. The advance team of Jonathan Carreño and Jacko went before us and made all the preparation. Many local preachers from the area came to these 2 days of lectures. I cannot explain how much preparation work it is to do one of these trips. Before we ever get to the Philippines, there has to be transportation set up. There has to be venues where we have lectures. The places, they have to be, somebody has to go there and they have to set up the venue. They have to hassle about the price to get the best price that we can. We have to have certain things when we are in those venues. There's certain equipment that we have to have. We have to have transportation to and from there. We have to have hotels to where we'll stay when we're there. And then we have to have transportation set up to leave there to go to the next place. We do none of that work. None of those preparation work is done by us. All that is done by Filipino preachers. One of the ones that we use over and over again is Brother Jonathan Carreño. He was in the insurance business and then he was in a stock business. He made a very good living. He made a living where he was given a 6-figure salary. And if you can believe in the Philippines, that's very well. You can live very well. He also received a car every 2 years. He went abroad at least twice a year. He gave all that up to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. But because of his background, because of his training and his extensive travel, he has become a godsend to us. Because he's able to make all the connections. He's able to go to the places and set it up before we get there. And everything runs like clockwork. You see, in the Philippines, you have to trust the brethren. There's places in the Philippines that we don't go to. And we don't go to because there's places that are harmful for us to go. There's rebels in the Philippines who are up in the mountains. There's rebels, there's Muslims in the Philippines. And they have no desire to hear the gospel. They have no desire to hear the Bible, and they do not like Americans. And so those are places that we stay away from. Is there danger in the Philippines? Yes, there is. 2 days before we got to Manila, to the hotel where we stayed at, to the mall that is across the street that we sometimes frequent to pick up supplies, there was a bombing and 3 people killed when a bomb went off on an escalator that was right across from the hotel that we're staying in. Yes, there's danger. But yet, you trust God and you do the best you can. And we trust the Filipino brethren to keep us out of harm's way. And for the most part, they've done a very good job. Brother Halbrook, on this particular trip, this was his 28th trip. In 2 weeks, he will leave for his 29th. And in April, when he is supposed to go with me and him, it will be his 30th trip in the Philippines since 1995. We went to Dumaguete City and we had 2 days of seminars. 150 people attended, and most of them were denominational preachers. We talked about the inspiration of the Bible. We talked about the authority of Christ. And we talked about the Great Commission. In the open forum that we have after every one of our lectures, there is a question and answer period. There is a give and take. And in those question and answer periods, there are men who disagree with us. And that's fine. But they are kind. They are not overbearing. They do not become argumentative. They ask good questions. They want answers. And when you show them in the Bible, they thank you and they don't get angry. And it's just a different mindset there when you have people who disagree with you. This was the first time in all my trips that we used a PowerPoint. And we did because there was a brother in Alabama who bought a projector for the Philippine work. And another brother bought a laptop. We were able to use it on this trip for the first time. It really helps us out because prior to using the PowerPoint, you had to write everything on a whiteboard or a chalkboard. And some of the lessons and some of the questions that you have, it just takes a lot of time. It really made better use of our time. The Filipino brethren loved it because it made them much easier to take notes and it was much easier for them to follow us. We had 2 baptisms in Dumaguete City and we had 1 request for prayers. We also had classes set up for follow-up. Classes for people who we couldn't stay there because we had somewhere else to go. And so we had local preachers who were there that had follow-up studies with people who came to the lectures. This is the Dumaguete Airport where we landed. And one of the things that's amazing about the Philippines is the amount of people wherever you go. When you get to an airport, they have a rope-off section until you hit the tarmac. And when you hit the tarmac, then you're fair game. And what they have is people who take your bags, take your luggage. That's how they make a living. That's how they feed their family. And everybody's vying for your attention. We do not deal with any of that. The Filipino preachers deal with that. They make the connections. They get the people to take the luggage. They get the people to make to get us from the airport to the lecture or to the hotel. We do none of that because they know how it works and they know how much to pay. We might give too much. We might not give enough. They know how all of that's done and they take care of all of that. We met in the Bethel Hotel, which is a rented room. Wherever we meet, we pay for the facility. Of course, the Filipino brethren don't have the money. That's one of the reasons that I ask for support when I go. These venues, anywhere can run from $500 to $750 for 2 days. And when that, we get the room, and we get the room for 2 complete days. And it's a benefit to us for 2 reasons. Number one, it's air conditioned. And that's a real benefit to us. And the second of all, it keeps them there where we can have the opportunity and time to teach them. There were 150 people that attended these lectures. In this slide, Brother David is speaking, and in the bottom I am speaking. We both speak at least 3 times in the morning, 3 times in the evening, and then we have questions and follow-up. Sometimes we preach 4 times a day. Other times we preach 3 times a day. But most of the time, we each preach 3 times a day, and then we have a question and answer period. Those question and answer periods can last anywhere from 1 hour to 2 hours, and I've even seen them go as long as 3 hours. And I've seen them go that while we're getting in the van to go to the hotel, they're still following us out, asking us questions, and asking us to come back. And again, other Filipino preachers take care of handling those requests. In the Bethel Hotel, 2 were baptized. This is what you see. The man on the right, Brother Jack O'Hare, he's one of the men that accompanied us. He is taking their confession. We don't baptize anyone that is baptized in the Philippines. We let the Filipino brethren do that. We do not want them to think there's something special being baptized by an American. We had some trouble some years ago. They had some trouble. where people wanted to wait until the Americans come to baptize them. So they took care of that problem. We no longer do it. We let the Filipino do. And another reason we do that, they get into water that I would never get into. I mean, if there's enough water to bury them, it doesn't make a difference if it's a ditch. It doesn't make a difference if it's a stream. I don't know what's in there, and it doesn't matter to them what's in there. They'll roll up their pants, they'll get in there, and as long as they can cover them, they'll go in there. And so we're more than willing to let them do that. And they're more than willing to do it. This is Ron and David. They were walking at night. Ron tries to walk at night. I'm so whipped at the end of the day, all I want to do is rest. But David and Ron, they sometimes walk at night. And this is right by the ocean. Dumaguete is right by the ocean. We look out of the hotel and the ocean is right in front of the hotel. We spent the first 2 days there. And then on Sunday, we spread out. When we go to a city, after we hold a lecture, anytime we're in a city on Sunday, we never all worship at the same place. We go and preach at two or three different places, each of us, and we go our separate ways, and we spread out. The next place that we were going is Old Mock City in Leyte. And the advance work was done by Brother Carreño, Brother Polino, and Zablala. The preaching training is 5 hours a day. 5 days a week, 10 hours a day. We begin at 8 o'clock, we end at 7 o'clock. We go every day, 5 days. And in that, we discuss Brother Harkrider. If any of you have ever seen Brother Harkrider's book, he has a 4-volume set called Basic Bible Doctrine. In those 5 days, we teach all of those lessons in those 4 volumes. Each of us preach about 3 times a day. Every preacher that attends these lectures, these preaching seminars, receives a Bible dictionary, a concordance, and books that total over $120. Where does the money come from? It comes from brethren all over the states. Brother Halbrook, every time he makes a trip, buys $3,000 or $4,000 worth of books. Sometimes he sends them ahead, sometimes he gives them. We split them up and send them with us, so you've got to learn to pack very tightly, because 70 pounds of what you're going to carry are going to be books. And then Ron just depends upon the brethren, and so far it's worked out that they supply the money, and he supplies some of it, and we supply some of it, and we take care of the bill when we get back. He has done that on every trip that he's gone on. And if it weren't for other brethren who have a love for the lost souls, that would be able to do that, we would not be able to do this. 27 gospel preachers sat in on this 5-day seminar. We had 2 denominational preachers that sat in for the whole 5 days, and at the end of the 5 days, they were baptized. There's much more follow-up work that's needed here. And the churches are so spread out that there are plans to go back there at a later date and to do some more follow-up work. This was done in the Don Felipe Hotel in a rented room that we paid. The man that's at the podium is Lordy Sanguin. Brother Lordy is one of the only preachers in the Philippines that has his own paper. It's called The Sword and the Shield. It's a monthly paper. It's 32 pages long. He prints it, and he has staff writers that write it, but he is the only preacher in the Philippines that has such a paper. And it has done a lot of good for the Philippine work. Brother Lordy preaches in Angeles City. I don't know if any of you know anything about the Philippines, but that's where the U.S. Air Force Base, Clark Air Force Base, used to be. That's where Subic Bay used to be. Now they are closed and now they are deserted. But that is the most American city in all the cities that I've visited in the Philippines. They know what Americans like to eat. They know how to treat us because for so many years they had the military there in the presence. By the way, they were not very happy when their government did not renew the contract and no longer has the American influence there. After the Americans left, the terrorist cells came in. And after we left, that's when the rebels took over in the mountains. Prior to that, they only had a skirmish of those things, but after the American presence left, that became a daily problem. While we were in the Philippines, in Manila, they took over one of the hotels. And we thought that we might have to take an alternate route to get home. We'd have to go through another country because they closed down the Manila airport for 2 days. But thankfully, before we left, they reopened it again. Ron used a PowerPoint here, and we do it on a bed sheet. Sometimes we do it on a whiteboard. And these young men, they're there. And for them to keep the books, they have to attend all the classes. If they leave, they leave the books there. They don't get the books if they don't do the whole 5 days. Now, while they're there, where do they stay? Well, they stay with brethren. Sometimes they stay. They stay in places that we would refer to as public houses that are very inexpensive, and they stay there. But they stay there, and they're separated from their family for 5 days in order that they might get this training. In this, every time we have a class, the first thing that we do before we start the class is we have a song and a prayer. This picture at the bottom is the giving away of the books at the end of the 5 days. And it's amazing to me to see grown men cry when you give them a Bible, when you give them a spiritual book. They are so thankful that you're willing to share and give them things that they have to pay nothing for. We take so many things here for granted, brethren, that we just do not know how blessed and lucky we are. And yet these men and women, especially the men, are very appreciative of the things that we do. This is a John takes the confession. The man in the middle of this picture on the top is Brother Carreño. He is the one that does all the legwork prior to us going there and setting up all the travel arrangements, the hotel arrangements, and the venue. Most of the baptism that take place, if we're by the ocean, that's where it takes place at, in the ocean. Sometimes you're not lucky and you just got to find somewhere. We've baptized people in swimming pools. We've climbed over fences at night, not knowing who is there, or they might mind if we're there. But if there's water enough to get them in the water, that's what we do in order. Now, we don't do that. We're a little bit more timid than that. But the Filipino brethren, wherever there's water, if there's someone who wants to be baptized, they do it immediately and they find a place, no matter how far they have to travel. Next, December 8th and 12th, we went to the second largest city in the Philippines, Cebu City. Here, Keith and David preach on the weekend, and Ron stayed in Tagbilera, Boho, and he's there for the Saturday, and he comes back on Sunday. And during the time that we were there, we have one preacher that died in an accident getting after he left one of our services. There was another preacher who's in a witness protection program because he witnesses a murder, and he was there the last time we were here. We don't know where he's at now, because he's in the witness protection program. We met his wife and his children. They still don't know where he's at. Those details are still being worked out. And we rented a small room, and at Cebu City we had two baptisms. Ron is in Tagbilera, and he is there with another preacher, and he preaches there for a Saturday and part of a Sunday. Next, on Monday morning, we went to the Cebu Business Hotel. We had 110. 25 of them were denominational preachers. Each of us spoke twice, and then we had an open forum. Jonathan Carreño and other Cebu City preachers cooperated to get contacts for these lectures. In Cebu City, we did a class on the authority of Christ. We had questions, and we had good questions. We had a general there that was retired that asked for one of my PowerPoint outlines. I did an outline on the character of a Christian. He wanted to use it to teach his converts. He was not in the Lord's church. He was in another church. And he thought it was such a good lesson on what it meant to have good character of a Christian, that he wanted to send it. He wanted to share it with them. And so he asked if I would share my material. I'm willing to share it with anyone, even though it's a denominational preacher. I know the truth will get out, and that might lead a soul to the truth, and that's what we want. Here, Keith charts and David preaches, and the man that Ron is with in this picture is a denominational official. He's in the hierarchy of the Pentecostal church there in Cebu City. He attended that lecture that day, and he's promised to do a follow-up study with one of the preachers in Cebu City. Then, probably the most important thing that we did while we were here, we did the next 2 days in Cebu City at the Marriott Hotel. It probably was the most costly thing that we've ever done in the Philippines. We brought 19 Filipino preachers together, and we gave them topics to speak upon. We had 30 observers besides the 19 Filipino preachers, and most of those observers were also preachers. And what we did is we brought some of the men there who have been the pioneers in the Philippines, men that had preached for 40, 50 years in the Philippines, men that these men had never met. Sometimes in the Philippines there is a case to be jealous, because sometimes people are in areas where they get more attention from the American preachers because they are in the larger city. Sometimes because of the success of one preacher over another, sometimes there's jealousy that's created. And so this is the third type of meeting that they've had like this. And what we try to do in these 2 days is we bring these preachers together so they can meet with one another. They stay with each other at night. That gives them more time to talk. And they began to cement relationships. They began to know each other. They began to pray for each other's work. And we hope that it brings them closer together and they work together instead of working against each other. And I believe it is doing a lot of good. You would be amazed at the prayers that we heard offered during these 2 days in Cebu City. Jonathan Carreño, he preached about the work in Cebu City, the second largest city in the Philippines. Then Edgar Sabian is in another area of the Philippines. And Brother Ben Cruz. Brother Ben Cruz has been preaching in the Philippines for 50 years. He has one of the largest churches in the Philippines. He suffered a stroke last year, and that's why he has that walker. That's why he's in a wheelchair. But Brother Ben Cruz has been instrumental in the Philippine work for many, many decades. Every trip that we take to the Philippines begins in Manila. And that's where Brother Cruz preaches. And one of Brother Cruz's daughter is a doctor. If we get sick, if we need medicine, if we have a medical problem, she is the one that gets us to where we need to go, gets us the medicine that we need, and she's the one that takes care of all of our medical needs while we are in the Philippines. Every one of these discussions ended in a panel discussion, where the preachers that spoke in that morning or afternoon, they came together and there was a panel discussion where the people that were there could ask questions concerning the topics that they talked about. Jamie Bobbis, the one in the first picture, is Ben and Cruz's son-in-law. He has a small church that I preached at on Sunday, the second Sunday I was there. Nola Villamore is a lawyer. He is a legal mind. And he was able to answer the legal problems that some of the Filipino brethren have come up with by trying to establish buildings and places of worship. And he was able to answer those questions. And Leo Amarda has been preaching in the Philippines for 45 years. Fred Sandoval, his son Edgar, Juan Aparte, and Domi Jacobs. Every one of these men have been preaching in the Philippines. Fred has been preaching the first preacher. Here, he's been preaching for 40 years. His son Edgar for 25. Brother Aparte has been preaching for 30 years. And Brother Domi has been preaching for over 45 years. I've been in each of these places, each of these men's location where they work. Brother Fred, the man in the yellow jacket, he has a radio program that goes out in the province where he lives that has been going on for 15 years. And they have many, many baptisms that result from that radio program. How much does that radio program cost? $20 a month for an hour-long program on Sunday mornings. I wish we could get those prices. Lordy Sanguin, Leonardo Maste, Rody Gumpad. You remember Brother Gumpad was here a couple of years ago. He was one of the speakers. And Julio Norte. Julio Norte, he works in the mountains in the Philippines. You know what he does every year? He wears out a horse. There is a brother in the state that buys him a new horse every year because every year he wears it out going up into the mountains to try to convert the rebels. He has gained their respect. He is one of the few men that can go up there and preach to those rebels and they leave him alone because they have so much respect for him. And he has converted many of them. And so I admire Brother Julie because that is quite dangerous. He is the only man I know in the Philippines that was willing to do that work. And he has been very good at what he does. He also took under his care a young preacher who lost his life, and he had 7 children, and Brother Julie took them under his wing, and he has raised them as his own children. And there's 2 gospel preachers in the States that help him with money in order that he could take care of those 7 orphans. 3 of them have graduated from college, and there's 2 more that are about to enter college. They're all Christians, and one of them are a 14-year-old boy, and he's one of the best Filipino preachers I have ever heard. And he's only 14 years old. Brother Julie is a wonderful individual. I greatly admire his love for the truth and the things that he's had to suffer for the cause of Christ. This is the venue where we had this special meeting. This is me speaking at the end of the meeting. I spoke, Ron spoke, and David spoke at the end of that meeting. At the end of that meeting, there was a prayer, and I believe that that's probably one of the best things that we did while we were there. They left with a better understanding of one another. They left there with a deeper appreciation for one another and the work that they do. You see, in the Philippines, things are not close together. Everything's spread out. There are different islands. There are some 16 islands in the Philippines. Nothing is close. To travel from one to another, it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. And so these are men who have never met one another. And so I believe that we did a lot of good in those 2 days. From there, we went to Iloilo City, and there were 50 denominational preachers at Iloilo City. On a Friday night, I want to tell you about what happened on Friday night. One of the Filipino preacher's son goes to college there at Iloilo City. He arranged for 20 or 25 of his friends to come and listen to us for 3 hours on a Friday night. How many college students do you know who would come and listen to a gospel seminar for 3 hours on a Friday night? But these 25 young men and women did. And we set up 3 studies with the people who attended those lectures at one night. It was very uplifting. We also had 3 baptisms here. And this is a place that we need to do one of our 5-day classes. There are preachers scattered all out in this area, and they are very much immature. They are not very knowledgeable, and they need help. And there's plans underway that we might go there and be able to do a 5-day seminar. We had this in the Future Villa Resort. You know what was interesting about this resort? It was supposed to be one of these 5-star resorts. I don't know who does the rating in the Philippines, but it's not the same as ours. But they were willing to come. We had an open air. This is one of the only places during this trip that we had an open air venue. We weren't in a, they just had 1 fan, but yet there were 75 people that attended every one of these lectures. It wasn't comfortable for us, but it wasn't very comfortable for them either. But we baptized 2 after these lectures were over. This is preaching in Iloilo City. These are the baptisms that took place. They took place in their pools. I had 3 pools at this villa, and they graciously allowed us to use one of them to baptize 3 after our lectures were over. Rody is standing there. The man that he's standing next to is Vic Sabian, Matt Sabian. He's been preaching in the Philippines for 50 years. He knew one of the men that was at the lectures, and while we were lecturing, he was studying with this man, and at the end of the lecture, he wanted to be baptized into Christ. And so, it's just amazing what happens in these lectures. This is the college students where we went on Friday night. And again, we had 3 follow-up studies. There was a young man there that came up to me. I taught a lesson on the plan of salvation. This young man, he had long hair, then a ponytail. He had what we would call, he was kind of scruffy looking. But he was the most attentive person of all the people that listened to us that night. And after my lecture was over, he came to me. We were packing our stuff up. He says, "Mr. Greer, can I ask you something? I want you to clarify something for my girlfriend here." And she was hung up about baptism. And she says, she keeps bringing up the thief on the cross. Can you, she can't seem to understand it when I tell her. Can you explain it to her? So we went to the thief, and for a brief period I tried to show her that he wasn't under the law, that he lived under the law of Moses. He wasn't under the law of Christ because it wasn't in effect yet. Tried to show him that Jesus had power on earth. And the whole time I'm opening the Bible, trying to show her and letting her read it, he said, "Now I told her. She says, "You." And then when I got done, he said, "See, it's not just what I think. That's what the Bible says." And she said, "Well, it's hard to argue with the Bible." That's what she said. I said, "Would you study with him? There's a preacher here that I know that will study with you." He says, "Yeah, I'll study with him." So we set up a study right there. But how many young people would come out on a Friday night to listen to the Bible? They do in the Philippines. December 16th and 17th, we went back to Manila. David and Keith were with Ben Cruz in the morning and at his son-in-law's in the afternoon. The next day, we had a Bible lecture where we taught 6 lessons. And I'm not even about to try to pronounce the name of that city in Manila where Ben's church is, but that church has just newly been built. And it's all funded by individuals in the state. Brother Cruz, for about 20 years, met in a facility that was in the middle of the town that 4 other denominations used the same building. In order for him to use the building, he had to go there at 7 o'clock. You think you get up early at 9:30 on Sunday? He had to use it from 7 to 9, and he had to be out of there at 9 because they had to come in at 9 to bring their instruments in for the next people that use that facility. And they wanted to raise their prices. And then they wanted to change and wanted them to meet at 5 o'clock in the morning instead of at 7 o'clock, and they kept making these outlandish things, and finally they determined that they were going to build a building, find a lot, and they were going to build a building of their own. The Filipino brethren at this congregation, over a period of 16 months, sacrificed $5,000 to buy the land. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot of money to us, but that's a tremendous amount of money in the Philippines. And they raised that money among themselves. And they sold things. And they sold things that were very precious to them. They sold pieces of land in order to get the money to be able to buy the land so they could build their building. And built it they did. We met in it while we were there. Ron is in another place in Manila doing at Phil Am Church, and this is the church that meets in the brother's home. Has about 30 people that meet there every Sunday. He preached there on that Sunday. This is the place where Brother Cruz, the new building that has just been built, this is where me and David were on Sunday, and we both taught twice here. This is the upstairs of this place. They stopped because they ran out of money. But they have hopes of making classrooms upstairs, and they're about $7,000 short from finally fulfilling. All the work in this building was done by Filipino brethren. All the mud laying, all the work, the stairs, the cement work, all of it's done by Filipino brethren in order to save money. But of course they don't have the funds to be able to build, to do it on their own, so American brethren have been very generous to give for the building of this building. I preached in Magete. Now this building here is an open-end building. But I was here 4 years ago, and I cannot believe the change in that building in 4 years. When I was there before, I had to fight the birds and keep looking up to make sure one didn't fly over my head while I was preaching. They did all this work themselves. They sacrificed. They put money aside. Some brethren gave them money. And what they did is they built, all they want is a wall. They want a wall and be able to put a roof over them. That's all they want. They don't want a fancy building. They just want something to keep the sun off their head, keep the rain out so they can meet, and they make their building very functional. The Lord's Supper at Magete. There were about 100 people here, and they have the Lord's Supper. They do it a little bit different than we do it. They offer the prayer for the bread and the fruit of the vine at the same time, and one man takes the bread and the other person takes the fruit of the vine. Nothing wrong with that. It's a matter of thing. When they take the collection, they sing a song. When they take the collection up, they sing a song. It's kind of very moving. The first time I experienced it, it was different, but it was very. This is a baptism in Orkemar City that was out in the ocean. These two young ladies that were baptized here, they didn't have a Bible. Me and David bought them a Bible, and the preacher that preached there, he came to where we were doing our lectureship to bring my receipt, so I knew that he bought that Bible. He wanted to make sure that I knew that he bought that Bible. That's how honest these people are. They are very diligent to let you know that they're honest in the things that you do for them. These are the preachers at the Cebu meeting. This is a singing before the preacher's seminar. You know what this is a picture of? David teaching Bible class for the young kids. Where am I? I'm upstairs. And I'm preaching to the young preachers upstairs. And David preaching the Bible class for the kids after the worship service. I believe that the preacher here had an ulterior motive in having David down there instead of having me there. You see, there's a young lady there that's his daughter that he wanted David to meet. But David's not married. So I believe there was an ulterior motive for him teaching that class instead of me. Here, I'm changing some of the charts for my lessons. And these two little girls are looking at me, and they got these sad looks on their face. And I turned around and said, "What's the matter, honey?" "No video games." No video games. This is a Sunday morning worship in a church home that meets in a preacher's home. This is, I was here about 4 years ago. At that time, there was no floor. There was no place to meet. We met outside. In 4 years, he has made improvements on his home here, and he's made a church in his home. This is travel day at the airport. This is what you do a lot of at the Philippines. You stand around and wait. This is a sun setting as we drive to the hotel on the last day of the last lecture after we leave. The next morning, we'll get up and we'll leave to go back to the United States. In those 22 days, we were in 10 cities. We baptized 7 people. We taught, I would estimate by the numbers that we had, we taught over 1,000 people. At the times that we were at, we were always asked to come back. We were even asked to come to places, to denominational preachers, churches, to preach at their churches. Can you imagine me getting an invitation to go into a Baptist church, to go into a Pentecostal church, to go into a Seventh-day Adventist church? I get them in the Philippines. I want to thank you, because without your love, your prayers, and your willingness to let me go, I could not make these kind of trips. These trips thrill my soul. I come back more edified, more on fire, more built up, because I know that the Word of God has power to convert people who are honest and are looking for what God's Word says. Don't give up our country. There are people in our country that are looking too. The difference in our country and theirs, they're harder to find in our country. But that doesn't mean that they do not exist. The power that converts the soul in the Philippines will also convert the soul in the United States. We must never give up trying. Many people bring their friends, their neighbors, the people that their kids are in school with, they bring them to these lectures. Every one of these lectures, Filipino bring people that they know. If they can do it, why don't we do it? I wonder about the answer to that question. The gospel is God's power to save. The seed must be planted to produce a crop. It can't be planted if we don't sow it. I want to commend you to take the gospel to people you know who are lost. They may reject it. They may not want to take it. They may not want to change their life. That's their choice. But they have a right to hear it. They have a right to make that decision. Don't you make them for them. And again, I want to thank you for allowing me to go. I wish, you know what I really wish is that you could go with me. I wish you could see what I see. I wish you could see the response that I get. If you ever saw it once, you would want to go again. Because it just thrills your soul to see men and women who are hungering and thirsting for righteousness. You know, Jesus mentioned that in His Sermon on the Mount, didn't He? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. God is requiring us to fill those who are hungry. We have them in this country. People are seeing the fallacy of human religion today. It's getting farther and farther away from the plain basic scripture and the plain basic worship of the Bible, and people are beginning to see through it. When they begin to see through it, that's when you and I need to step in and show them that God has a better way. And if you'll do that, 1 Corinthians 3 makes this promise. If we plant and we water, God will give the increase. You're here tonight and you're not a child of God. Jesus died in order that you might have a relationship with Him. That you might have a way out of your sin. That you might be able to stand one day before Him in judgment, not fearful, but knowing that heaven will be your eternal home. If you've already begun that travel and you have wandered by the wayside, you've allowed other things in this life to come before God and His responsibility that He's given you. That's not a tragedy. The tragedy is if you remain and let it be that way. You can repent. You can come home. God will forgive you. God will wrap His arms around you again, and He will help you do better. If we can help you tonight anyway, we bid you to come forward as together we stand and sing.